Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Ghost Joe here with an awesome bonus episode brought to you by our friend John Wright, where he deep dives into the big footage. Get it? And possibly the most compelling, but the most controversial evidence of Bigfoot known as the Patterson-Gimlin footage. But first, let's go over the top 8 states that have seen the big guy pretty much the most. Just bear in mind that this article from the Travel Channel was published in 2019, so I'm sure the numbers have significantly gotten higher since then. So let's get to number 8. So number 8 is Texas with 806 sightings, especially the areas that border Oklahoma and Louisiana. So if you're going to check it out, check those places out and maybe you'll see Bigfoot. Number 7, Oregon with 1,009 sightings. Number 6 is Ohio with 1,042 sightings. Number 5 is my home state, New York, with 1,068 sightings. And, you know, I would love to actually go on a Bigfoot expedition. So next time the Squatch Father goes out, I hope he invites me because I'd love to tag along. Number 4, 1,131 sightings goes to Michigan. You know, even though Michigan is probably more famous for the Dogman, but they do have quite a bit of Bigfoot sightings as well. Some of the highest amounts of Bigfoot activity is near the Seney National Wildlife Refuge in Michigan's rugged Upper Peninsula. One eerie report actually comes from a mother who was driving with her young infant. She pulled over for the night in a picnic area, only to be awoken by a foul smell. When she opened her eyes, a large hairy creature was staring at her child through the windshield. Creepy. So number 3 is Pennsylvania with 1,340 sightings. California comes in at number 2 with 1,697 sightings, which actually California is where the name Bigfoot was coined. And number 1 with 2,032 sightings is Washington State. The best place to catch a glimpse would be the Blue Mountains, Ape Canyon, or Okanagan County. So that's enough of me, guys. Let's get you into the right headspace.
Good evening. You are entering a dimension where up is down, good is evil, and day is night. You've just made a wrong turn into the right headspace.
Thanks, Joe. Today's segment is about the Patterson-Gimlin film, which some may consider to be the best possible evidence in regards to the existence of Bigfoot. But before I jump in and I start doing all these different things, one thing I wanted to point out was, if you want to look at the video itself, you can find, just go on YouTube, you can look it up, and you can find the original footage or copies of the original footage. But the one that you really want to look at is, I found this one, it was 2017 Complete Patterson Bigfoot Film Enhanced Version with Vegas Pro 4. It was posted by Invisible Redneck. So that one, I think, is probably the best that you'll be able to find and shows some of the clearest images that you're going to see in regards to the Bigfoot video. The two main characters, or the two main people that we're going to talk about, are Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. Both of these gentlemen were rodeo riders. They were amateur boxers and they were wannabe film stars, kind of like sort of like a Roy Rogers sort of type figure. Based on the movie idea, Patterson wanted to come up with some sort of, we'll call it like a docudrama about Bigfoot. Patterson was inspired to look for Bigfoot after reading Ivan Sanderson's article in True Magazine and then also reading his book, Abominable Snowmen, Legend Come to Life. Now, the idea that he had come up with for the docudrama was going to be based on a group of hunters that were on this quest to go out and find this creature. As they did, they would discuss some of the different stories, one example being Ape Canyon, and all these different incidents would show up as flashbacks within the movie itself. A number of people are going to be involved in this process. Two of the main names, obviously Patterson and Gimlin, but beyond that, two of the other guys that will show up a little bit later on in the process are Bob Hieronymus and Philip Morris. So the next question is, where was this film and when did it take place? So this takes place in Northern California in what they refer to as the Six Rivers National Park. The filming took place on October 20th, 1967. Patterson had started doing the filming for the movie in late May, and this spilled over into somewhere around early June 1967. In August of 67, John Green, who's a well-known journalist, well-known in Bigfoot fields, and he was originally from British Columbia. Another gentleman by the name of Rene DeHinden, also a British Columbia Bigfoot hunter, and an archaeologist by the name of Don Abbott, had been in that area and found tracks along the Blue Creek Mountain. Patterson had heard about the tracks by way of Al Hodgson. Hodgson is the gentleman who owned a general store in Willow Creek. And as a result of hearing those stories, Patterson had come up with a plan that, hey, you know what? Let's go up in that area and check it out. So on October 20th, Patterson and Gimlin made their way to the area. They kind of thought when they went into it, they were hoping to find tracks, not knowing what it was that they would come out with as a result of their efforts. So what they were hoping was they could get video of the tracks and then kind of splice and edit those into the movie itself. At some point between 1:15 and 1:40, they actually see the creature. So that brings us to the question of what the film. At this point, I would encourage you to pause this segment, look up the Patterson-Gimlin film. If you can find the original, definitely watch the original. There's another gentleman by the name of MK Davis, who is on YouTube, and he has all kinds of different versions of it, different enhanced, where he takes it frame by frame. It's amazing the amount of time and work this gentleman put into what it is that he does. I would also encourage you, like I said in the very beginning, take a look at that 2017 complete Patterson Bigfoot film, the enhanced version. It's, again, some of the better versions that you're going to find. And in the end, it's ultimately going to come down to you're going to watch the video and you can ultimately come to your own conclusion based upon the original. Can be very confusing. It can be very disorienting because of all the movement, the way the camera jumps around. The stabilized version is going to be much, much better. You're going to see things clearer, things that people couldn't see originally. And maybe that's part of the reason why there's kind of like this stigma that goes with the video and man in the monkey suit, all that stuff. In any case, the movement was the result of, obviously, Patterson jumping down off of his horse, chasing after this creature, uneven terrain. And then eventually he does fall to his knees. Once he drops to his knees, you do get some stabilized footage. Now, Gimlin, who had also dismounted his horse and supposedly, according to the story, with his rifle in hand, because he wasn't quite sure what this thing was, he eventually does jump back up on his horse. He does follow the creature for about 300 yards. Once he does this, he kind of realizes, wait a second, I just left Roger all by himself, and Roger was unarmed. So he rides back so that this way he can make sure that Roger's okay. With Gimlin by his side, both men will wind up tracking Patty. Accounts say that they will do this for up to 1 to 3 miles, depending upon which story you read. At this point, they decided it would be better if they go back to their camp, retrieve the plaster from their camp, head back to the site, and start making casts. So in this case, they were limited with the amount of plaster that they had. So they decided they would do one really good print of the right foot and then one really good print of the left foot. So that this way they would have the best possible versions of those. They then head to Eureka, which had a small airport. A pilot flew the film to Yakima, and Patterson's brother-in-law, Al Diatley, picked up the film and brought it to a processing area. P&G would not return to their camp until about 12 a.m. At 5 a.m., Bob Gimlin went back to the site. The reason why is because it had started to rain. He had some cardboard, things like that, that he was going to use to try and cover the prints to preserve them. Fortunately, most of the cardboard had wilted due to the rain. So at this point, he was forced to use whatever he had lying around. And one of the things that they did have was bark. So he started taking tree bark and using that to cover the tracks. On October 23rd of 1967, U.S. Forest Service Ranger Lyle Laverty, who was accompanied by three other people, went to the Bluff Creek site and they took photos of the tracks. This is significant because he had been in that area on the 19th and he had seen no tracks. And what this shows is that the day before those guys went through there, Patterson and Gimlin, there was nothing there. So the tracks were made the day of the incident. It's believed that on the 29th of October, Bob Titmus, a taxidermist and a tracker and a Bigfoot enthusiast, along with his sister and her husband, had flown to California to see the site. Titmus had made successive casts, so he was able to get the whole entire, well, not the whole entire, but he was able to get a pretty good chunk of the trackway that was made by Patty during the process of her moving across the stream. and in addition to that, he was able to track the movements of both Patty and Patterson and Gimlin. And what he did was wind up plotting those movements on a map. All right, so why the controversy? At first glance, most people will dismiss the video as a man in a monkey suit. And to be fair, I thought the same thing the very first time I saw the video. But again, that was also because of the unstabilized version. It's really, really hard to get any detail out of that version. When you see the stabilized version, things change a little bit. And one of the things that people or the debunkers do point to is the timeline. Most of them are going to say that it was not possible for the two men to do all the things that they claim to have done, such as spot the creature, track it, cast the prints, take the video and fly, drive to the airport, send the film to Yakima, have it developed, and then get it back in time so that they can review it a few days later. So one of the things they will point to is the types of roads that they were dealing with, the speed limits that they were dealing with, and the total amount of mileage that it would cover. So to get from their campsite would and to their hometown would cover some 580 miles. A number of people have duplicated this trip. Is it a tight window? Yes. In the end, they were able to prove that it was possible to do all the things that these gentlemen claimed to do and make it back home in time to do to show the video. Now, as far as other controversies in regards to the film, one of the big things is the speed at which the film was done. So Patterson failed to note the speed at which he had filmed the subject. The camera was a was capable of filming at 16 feet per second, 24 feet per second, 32 feet per second, 48 feet per second, and 64 feet per second. It is said that typically Patterson would film at somewhere around 24 feet per second. So why the controversy over the speed of the playback? The reason why is this would affect the ability to properly evaluate the speed and the stride of the creature in the video. This prevents biomechanical experts from being able to make an accurate conclusion about the subject. Was her movements that of a human, or was it the movements of something else? In conclusion, most of the people who reviewed the films agreed that the proper speed was probably around 18 feet per second. This was based on watching the horses in the early stages of the video and their movements and how a horse would normally move. It was also based on the tests of the K100 camera, which was used. It was concluded that a K100 set at 16 feet per second would record at slightly faster speeds. So the conclusion was that it would film probably somewhere around 18 feet per second. Now, the stability of the film. There's a total of 2 minutes of video. The majority of it is difficult to view due to the constant movement of the camera. This is what makes it so hard to come to a conclusion and probably led a lot of people to believe that it was by design. You see this with like really bad horror movies. It's either really dark or there's a lot of movement, fast movement, in an attempt to hide really bad either sets, costumes, those sorts of things. As I said earlier, I've looked at several different versions. And as I recommended, the 2017 Complete Patterson Bigfoot Enhanced version. There's another one by MK Davis that is, I thought, absolutely amazing. And he posted by the name GreenWave201FB. Take a look at that. Look him up on YouTube. In that video, John Green had gone to that site and done it with him. He brought a gentleman by the name of Jim McLaren. Now, Jim McLaren was 6'5". Again, going back and forth, people have done analysis of the video, have seen Patty, made conclusions that she was 7'6", blah, blah, blah. One of the more common conclusions, or at least for most experts, they're going to settle in somewhere around 6'6", maybe 6'5", 6'7", somewhere in that range. What I love about what MK Davis did with this video is he took the one that Jim McLaren and John Green did, which it shows Jim McLaren following the trackway of Patty. And then what he does is he takes the version of Patty and he superimposes that at different frames throughout the whole entire thing. And what he does is he shows you how big Patty is in comparison to Jim McLaren. So again, I was kind of one of those guys where I sat there and looked at it and I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I'm kind of on the fringe with this thing. Once I saw that version, it kind of clarified things for me. If it was a human in a suit, yes, it's possible to get somebody who's 6'5", 6'6". It was bring up the question, how many people like that are walking around? There aren't too many Shaquille O'Neals, guys that are the size of a mountain that you would be able to look up and pull this kind of thing off. But when you look at Patty versus McLaren, you can see McLaren was 6'5". I think they said he was somewhere around 200 pounds during that time frame. You can see how much more massive Patty is compared to Jim McLaren in that version. So again, I would tell you, take a look at the version that was posted 2017, Complete Patterson and Bigfoot Film Enhanced Version with Vegas Pro 14, posted by Invisible Redneck. Take a look at the MK Davis post. And there's another one that was posted by Mojo Pin, M-O-J-O Pin 1983. Those are what I thought were probably the better videos. As far as supposed hoaxers, I had mentioned Bob Hieronymus and Philip Morris earlier on. Bob Hieronymus claims to be the guy in the suit. He was originally connected to the story because Patterson and Gimlin, he was kind of the part of the party that was being used to make the film. And it was also his horses or some of his horses that were being used for them to trek around the woods in that area. As far as corroborating evidence, his family members claimed to see a monkey suit in the back of his car. This was also stated by a friend. No dates were ever given for the supposed suit that had been seen. Hieronymus did not reveal that he was Bigfoot until 1998. And I'll talk a little bit more about him as we go through this. Philip Morris's part in this, he owned a North Carolina based costume company, and supposedly it was one of the best costume creators in the country at that time. He claimed that he had sold a monkey suit to Roger Patterson, and he doesn't make that claim until 2002. Now, Morris stated that his costume was purchased in 1967, but he was unable to provide any paperwork that would go through and kind of support the idea that he is the one that provided that suit. Morris also claims that he received phone calls from Patterson asking about how he would be able to bulk up the suit and how he'd be able to make the arms longer. And supposedly he had told him to use extensions, some type of handle or something like that could have been used to extend the arms, which seemed to be a little bit longer than a normal human arm. the other thing that he mentioned is that it was a male suit. It was not a female suit, which we know Patty had breasts. Now, as far as how were these guys able to kind of prove that they were the gentleman behind the hoax? In 2004, National Geographic paid for Bob Hieronymus and Philip Morris to recreate the PNG film. You can go online. You can look this up. I've seen some clips from it. How do I want to say this? I think it was probably one of the lamest attempts I've ever seen. It was noted that the suit created for the occasion looked nothing like that of Patty. You'll see the video. You'll see the clips and everything, and it looks absolutely nothing like Patty. It's like from the get-go, absolutely fake. Like it looks like a really cheap Halloween costume. And this is in 2004. We have better synthetic materials, all these different things. And it looks really, really bad. And anyway, so the project would eventually be scrapped because these guys were so bad at trying to perpetrate the hoax. Now, the suit itself, a number of experts and citizen scientists have weighed in on the subject, the majority dismissing the video because of the alleged suit worn by Patty. Hieronymus' statements, the suit consisted of two parts. Now, he says that there was a top and a bottom. He also claims that the suit had been made from horse hide and that it had stunk. The hands and feet were part of the costume. And Morris, when he talked about it, he claimed that the suit was one solid piece. It was made of synthetic material, not horse hide. And it had a zipper straight down the back. And that the hands and feet were separate pieces, so like gloves and boots. In an attempt to try and resolve the conflicting stories, Greg Long, author tied to Hieronymus, speculated that Patterson may have modified the suit from Morris by attaching separate pieces, such as the hands and the feet, and adding a new mask. Again, that's a lot to take in. Now, as far as what are my issues with it being a suit, first of all, the conflicting accounts. How do you throw that stuff out? You got one guy talking about it was a top and a separate bottom. You got the other guy talking about it's one piece. got the idea of hands and feet being attached versus not being attached. They mentioned that Hieronymus said he wore shoulder pads to bulk up. Why is this a major issue for me? Because when you look at Patty in that video, she's really well proportioned. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'm saying it's really well proportioned. I know that other people, MK Davis, when you go through and you watch some of his videos, is going to talk about how you can see muscle movement and things like that. I don't necessarily see all of the things that some of the experts are going to see. I do see natural movement. I see something that isn't kind of like forced in any way, shape, or form. But again, I come back to how well proportioned she was. If you look at the video of Jim McLaren, you look at that video superimposed over the top with Patty, you can see how big her arms are. And it's not like disproportionate. Like if you look at some pretty hastily made costumes, you'll see kind of like if you've ever watched Toy Story and Woody has to have his arms fixed and the one part of his arm is like really puffy and the other part of his arm is really natural. That's kind of the image that pops into my mind. It's really hard to kind of duplicate those things. The thickness of her legs, like from the thigh all the way down to the foot, if it was a boot, if it was padding, you would see like the bunching. And that's the thing that really stands out to me is you don't see that. You don't see that bagginess. As far as a zipper is concerned, you can see the one shot where Patty has her back to the camera and she's walking away and there's no zipper. One of the things that does pop up is Esteban Sarmiento, who is a primatologist, said the one thing he could not see was a cleft in the rear end of Patty. Now, in the extended versions, you will see at the one point where she's kind of walking up the hill, walking away, you can see the shadow, you can see the cleft of the backside of Patty. So I kind of take that one and kind of push it to the side. Maybe it's because he didn't look at the stabilized version. I don't know. I can't talk to him about that. But that's one of the things that really stands out for me. So the last thing I'm going to mention is the gait of Patty. I've watched a number of videos where you have these modern special effects people who go through and they debunk it. And they're like, oh, no, it's not real. It's a guy in a monkey suit. And one of the videos that I'd watched, it showed Bob Hieronymus. And again, Hieronymus, not the same size and all the other things that go with it. He did have a similar gait. I'm not saying that it was the same. Now, the video that they showed him walking in, he was just basically walking down the street. It's not in a similar setting or anything even close to it. And if you go back and you look at the National Geographic stuff, you'll see when he tries to replicate it and he's walking, it is really clumsy. He doesn't even come close. So I think that's kind of like people who weren't necessarily invested in the topic of Bigfoot and we're just looking at it from the standpoint of, oh yeah, he can kind of mimic that walk. And he kind of left it there. As far as the gait is concerned, were humans capable of actually mimicking that particular type of walk? The answer is yes. If you take a look at the YouTube, there's a show called Best Evidence, and it's Bigfoot is the episode. And this came out in 2007. You have Dr. Jeff Meldrum's in there, Jessica Rose, who is a doctor also, James Gamble, doctor. Both of them are from the Stanford University Motion and Gait Analysis Lab. They go through a series of different things. They have an actor who comes in, does the stand-in for Patty. They spend some time working on can he get the correct motions, arm movements, that sort of thing, the right lean as far as the forward lean of Patty. And once they are able to kind of analyze that, then they put a suit on this gentleman, and then they have him go through and try to mimic it. In the end, the subject was able to match some but not all of the movements of Patty. So I just went back and I watched video and I spent, I don't know, probably about a good 40 minutes just watching the video, just repeating it. The reason why is because I'm a track coach. And one of the things that I'm really involved in and study a lot is the kinematics of my athletes, their movements. One of the movements that struck me as kind of weird was the knee drive of the actor who was wearing the costume. And it was a really exaggerated knee lift, which was much different than what I saw with Patty. So this was more of a vertical as opposed to a horizontal movement. And when you watch the video of Patty walking, you can see it's moving forward. The knee is pushing forward as opposed to up in order to clear that foot so that it can come through and replant and drive behind. So that was one of the things that really stood out to me, is that Patty was much more relaxed and that it looked less forced or contrived. The other thing that stood out is the movement of the feet and how they flexed. when you watch the actor, you can tell that those were fake feet. And again, I come back to, you look at the Patty video, you can see that there's no separation of the lower part of the leg plus the foot, everything else. It looks like it's just, everything's connected. It's one solid piece. And as the foot flexes and pushes, you don't see like the floppiness of like these fake feet. Now, it could be just that it was poor costume design. I don't know how to explain it other than it didn't look natural to me. Now, am I an expert? No. But do I know something about biomechanics? Yeah, because I use it on a regular basis with my runners and my jumpers. The more efficient their form and their push off and forces and everything else, whether they be horizontal or vertical, all play a part in what it is that I do on a regular basis. I'm going to close out the segment with this. Is the video a hoax? I don't think so. I don't always see what the experts see. I do my best to keep an open mind, and I hope that someday, maybe soon, someone can bring forward more conclusive evidence. I lean more toward the video being real, mostly because of the combination of the video. You have the footprints, you have the trackway. And the other part is, any of the hoaxers that have come forward have been unable to prove, whether it be through corroboration or attempted replication, that they were able to pull this off during that time frame. Again, 2004, they do the National Geographic video, and it failed miserably. So I'd like to think, until proven otherwise, that Bigfoot is a definite possibility. Hopefully this leaves you in the right headspace.
Thank you, my friend, for your awesome, awesome research on this footage. You know, I was actually surprised to hear you say that you feel that this footage is legit, but I think that's awesome. If you guys want to hear from someone who has actually had some very up-close encounters with Bigfoot, check out this season, Season 4's Episode 7, where the Nat Man and I interviewed the Squatch Father, Al Santariga, about his insane encounters with the big guy and other cryptids as well, and aliens and UFOs. Awesome, awesome stuff. So please check that out. If you've ever spotted Bigfoot or anything paranormal, paranormal-wise, we want to hear from you. Call 845-600-0744 and leave us a voicemail, or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. So that's going to do it for this bonus episode. The next episode next week is going to be our New Year's episode. I know it's going to be running a little bit late, but, you know, life happens, and, you know, we had things to do, all right? So, you know, don't go jumping down my throat, all right? So it'll be out, and you'll be happy, and you'll like it. Otherwise, you could check out all of our other episodes anywhere, you know, on any podcasting platforms like what you're listening to now. You could check us out on YouTube, where I also do some quick segments on certain things as well that you might like. We're on TikTok. We're on Instagram. All of that stuff is in the show notes, so please check it out, and I'll talk to you guys next week. And, yeah. Have a great week, everybody. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warpedrealitypodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your thoughts.